CMC Markets is a pioneering CFD and spread betting provider. With more than 30 years of experience, CMC Markets provides traders with the tools they need to trade confidently. 76% of retail investor accounts lose money.
Welcome to the City View podcast in partnership with CMC Markets. I'm Andy Sylvester, acting editor of City AM, and we'll launch right into the news, analysis, and interviews that you need for the week ahead in the city. Hello and welcome to the City View podcast in partnership with CMC Markets. I'm City AM acting editor Andy Sylvester. In a minute or two, I'll be joined by James Warrington, City AM's man on all things tech and media, to look at a couple of hot button issues. And then Canaccord's head of equities, Alex Allen, will join me for a look at a host of macroeconomic trends. But first, what a week it was in the rearview mirror. Not only did we get the PM's roadmap for the end of lockdown, but we got a bucket load of results and data which painted quite the picture for the UK and global economy. We'll start from the back. Friday saw Gatwick announce a near £500 million loss for 2020, which IAG, owner of BA, then trumped with its own big red number, £2 billion in their case. Passenger revenues falling through the floor in both, and a year disrupted by the pandemic and lockdown restrictions. Earlier in the week, Heathrow said it had the worst year in its entire history. So what now for the aviation industry? There are some chinks of light. Global action on vaccine passports is surely somewhat inevitable, and the burst of leisure travel when we finally can should see planes busy indeed. But what about in the longer term? Is business travel dead? I personally tend to think not, but time will tell, and certainly long haul will take a while to recover. Amongst the rest, good news for Serco, who did well out of COVID-19 contracts, and for BAE Systems, showing defence and security is usually a good place to be. Bad news, though, on the flip side for ABF, the owner of Primark, who expect profits to be hit by more than £1 billion thanks to their high street flagships remaining closed. Still no word from them on whether they'll ever go digital. And an interesting sign of what could be things to come, Jefferies, the global investment bank, dropped a policy which would have seen staff require a vaccine passport to re-enter the office. The firm changed its tune to say everybody's situation is unique. They won't be the last firm grappling with the new normal once we're allowed back to work. Here's James. Thanks, James. Good of you to join me.
Good to be here. Thanks, Andy.
Thought we'd start down under. We can't go there physically, but we can do a little bit of news work over there. There's been an almighty brouhaha for a while now between Facebook and the Australian government about the social media firm essentially hosting news created by other publishers and whether there should be a cost attached, but a deal was reached.
Absolutely, yes. Well, it's been manic in the last couple of weeks, really, but Australia has now passed this landmark law that will force tech platforms to pay publishers for use of their news. And it comes, as you say, after quite a bitter row that saw Facebook block access to news in the country. But it's now gone through, albeit with some quite significant amendments. And these in practice mean that the tech giants can avoid any form of government arbitration by inking deals privately with the publishers. So both sides now are claiming victory. We've seen some quite fiery interventions from the likes of Nick Clegg, the former Deputy Prime Minister turned Facebook spin doctor, as well as Lord Rothermere, the owner of the Daily Mail Group. But it's not just significant for Australia, really, this law. It's been closely watched elsewhere in the world with other jurisdictions considering their own laws. But I think what has happened really sets a precedent for deals rather than legislation, and that's something we're already starting to see. So Rupert Murdoch's News Corp, which owns The Times and Sun titles, as well as a host of other news outlets in the UK and elsewhere in the world, have now signed deals with the likes of Google and Facebook, meaning that there will be some compensation for their content.
Yeah, and of course it was an extraordinary row, as you say, but of course this deal signing spree, I suppose, comes from the fact that digital media doesn't really, its business model at least, has been entirely disrupted by the social media giants. Social media giants have a certain amount of control, not just over search, as you kind of immediately think about it, but particularly about the advertising kind of verticals, as they say. And that was on the issue, that was on the agenda for the Competition and Markets Authority this week here.
Well, that's it. And the phrase that people often use with this is about levelling the playing field, or re-levelling the playing field, if you like. And the CMA, yes, this week, the chief executive, Andrea Coscelli, he came out in support of Australia's laws and actually said that the UK should pursue a similar policy. But he also fired a warning shot across the bow of big tech, and he criticised their dominance, as you say, in the digital advertising market and the so-called duopoly power of Facebook and Google. Remember, those two companies alone take 80% of all UK digital advertising spend, and Google takes more than 90% of search advertising. So it's this huge power in the market that they have. And the CMA is forming a digital markets unit, they're calling it, this new body that will draw up new competition laws and potentially hand down quite hefty fines to tech platforms if they fall foul of any kind of anti-monopoly practices, anti-competitive practices. And it's part of a wider regulatory regime that's coming in this country. Now, Coscelli stopped short of calling for a breakup of these big tech giants, but from his comments this week, it's certainly clear which way the regulatory wind is blowing.
Fascinating stuff. And, you know, a remarkable turnaround from where we were even 2 or 3 years ago when these firms looked like they were possibly even too big to regulate. James, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks there to James for joining us. Now, before we get to Alex, I'll just take a quick look at the week to come, which is punctuated on Wednesday with the budget. It will be what feels like the 100th big set piece from Chancellor Rishi Sunak, who's only been in the job for actually a year. And in it, he will have to try and ride something like four horses at once. He has to lay out economic support until June, as lockdown hopefully comes to an end. He needs to come up with a plan to restore sanity in public spending, with tax rises inevitable. He needs to deliver a long-term growth policy that appeals to all wings of his party and the markets, and somehow remain popular with the country. A difficult task. Corporation tax seems likely to go up, and capital gains tax may well be part of the mix too. But the Chancellor is a politician, and a good one. We can expect some sort of rabbit to emerge from his hat. Perhaps some kind of leg up for youngsters hit the hardest by the economic crisis of COVID-19, if not the medical one. And after last week's bumper set, it's another big week of results. Tuesday sees Travis Perkins, Taylor Wimpey and IWG, amongst others, deliver the goods, while Thursday's list includes Aviva and William Hill. Another busy week at 7 a.m. in the City AM newsroom. So plenty to look forward to, if that's the phrase. And now I'll turn to Alex Aylin, Head of Equities at independent investment bank Canaccord Genuity. Alex, absolute pleasure to have you here.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me.
I guess one way to kick off, we're going to look forward mainly, but just looking back at the last year, we're now almost at the anniversary of, you know, what we called the Corona crash on the front page of the papers. Just looking at stock markets right across the world fall through the floor as, I guess, the scale of the pandemic became clear. And yet, after that initial shock last year, equities throughout most of 2020, despite the fact that trading environments for almost all companies were pretty miserable, crept up gently throughout the year. There are people now talking about, you know, FTSE hitting 8,000 by the end of the year. What do you think is sort of behind that resilience, I suppose?
Yeah, I guess one of the main reasons is that we do operate in a low interest rate environment, and equities as an asset class has been a good place to, or one of the only places to really generate real returns. If you look, I guess the market still offers good value relative to historic measures, but also the US, and we're continuing to see good institutional interest in here in the UK, but also globally. And obviously Canaccord is a global firm, so we can see that throughout the world.
And Alex, you deal with a lot of tech clients at Canaccord, as you say, across the global sort of piece. They were one of the industries, I suppose, that drove resilience throughout COVID-19. They really came to the fore last year, didn't they?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that's a few reasons. One, because the business models that lots of those companies now operate in. Years ago, they used to have initial license fee type models. Now they're all SaaS-based and have a significant proportion of their revenues is recurring. So they have been very, very resilient. So that's one side of the equation. The other side is that they've all benefited from the digitization and the digital transformation that we've seen. And that's across e-commerce, across government, et cetera. And I think that will continue.
And do you think the M&A that we've seen in that sector will continue as well?
I think so. Obviously, we had iDox a bid there last week. We had IMI Mobile not long before that. And I think, obviously, debt is cheap. Private equity has big pools of capital at the moment. And the structural growth that those companies are seeing and the recurring revenue that they see is attractive.
I'm thinking about those, I guess, firms that didn't have that option. You've been involved a little bit in some recovery plays from the pandemic. I know you're involved in Jet 2. Was there ever a doubt in your mind that it was possible to put these recovery plans in place for a world that does return to normal?
Yeah, I mean, Jet 2 specifically has a great brand and customer base, and the investors have always supported Jet 2. So the transaction that we did 2 weeks ago, which was just over £400 million, was very well supported by the institutions that we speak to, and the shares are up, I think, around 20% since that raise.
Yeah, and good news for them, good news for investors. Just looking forward about priorities for the year to come and going forward, and the investors you work with, and indeed the clients you work with, actually. ESG is going to be such a remarkably big topic this year as we head towards COP26 on the political side, and it seems to me more than ever it features very much part of what people want to do in the city and where people are trying to put their money and where they see long-term sustainable growth and returns. Is that the feedback that you've had from sort of both sides, both the companies that you're working with as well as the investors that you speak to?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, the interest within ESG has increased significantly over the last year or so. We at Canaccord focus more on sustainability. That's the factor we focus on. We raised around £100 million across three transactions last year, but the IPO pipeline there is significant, as I think that these earlier stage companies, and often their technology base, are seeing that realizing the institutional appetite and the support and funds that they can access by coming to the market.
Mm. And certainly sustainability seems to be one area in which, you know, I talked about the Chancellor earlier. It certainly seems to be something that he wants to join the city towards.
Most definitely. In terms of the companies that we have worked for or looking to bring to market, that's battery technologies. So Invinity is vanadium flow batteries. We have an IPO, which is focused on new motor technology playing into the EV market. So it really is varied.
Mm. Well, certainly lots to come, and it'll be a massive issue for the city, that is no doubt. Alex, absolute pleasure to have you on and to whiz through these topics.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
And that is all from us at the City View podcast this week. I'm Andy Sylvester. That was in partnership with CMC Markets. Who would have believed it's March? The sun is at least poking out from behind the clouds. Have a good week, and we'll see you next time. That was the City View podcast in partnership with CMC Markets. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, all the news, analysis and opinion you need will be on cityam.com.
CMC Markets is a pioneering CFD and spread betting provider. With more than 30 years of experience, CMC Markets provides traders with the tools they need to trade confidently.
76% of retail investor accounts lose money.